Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the June 7 meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board, the City of Morro Bay. Let the record show that...
Ryan, we didn't even get through half the thing, so I think we're going to spend a little more time still, and I appreciate his interest and appreciate his volunteering to serve on the board, as I do with all of you. I don't know if Bill would like to say anything or...
Thank you for picking me, and I look forward to working with the board here on a lot of the issues that we have here at the Harbor. Thank you.
Now we'll move to the minutes. Are there any corrections or comments on the minutes? If none, I would look for a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion that we approve the synopsis minutes.
Second by Lynn. Motion by Gene. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? And oral communications. Are there any members of the audience who'd like to address the board on matters that are not on the agenda relating to the harbor? Tonight, now is the time to do so.
Jeremiah.
Your turn.
Is this on? Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question, Roger.
It was members of the audience who wanted to address the board on matters that aren't agendized.
Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, of the Harbor Advisory Board.
And you might want to say who you are for the record, please,
sorry.
Jeremiah. We know who you are, but...
Sorry. My name is Jeremiah O'Brien, president of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization. And I believe there was something on the...
I asked Jeremiah to show up, and
is that agendarized?
But it's not on the agenda. It's in the Vision 2020, and they're going to discuss it further, the boatyard further, in a couple months here. So I would say if you want to go, you can. And it's not going to be much happening on that tonight, other than discussion on it.
Okay, I'm sorry, I wasn't all that prepared. As you can see, I did come to discuss the boatyard, and if it is not on the agenda, would this be the proper time?
Well, it will be coming up during after Nancy Barta addresses us on the Vision 2020, and that would probably be an appropriate time. And I would invite you to make any comments you'd like to concerning it at that time, because if you're out of town fishing or something, you know, this would be an opportunity tonight, and it would be appropriate then.
Okay.
So on the next agenda item, okay?
Okay. So later on this evening, is that...
In 10 or 15 minutes, maybe.
Okay, fine. And just for, while I'm standing here, I guess the salmon fishing began this year commercially on May 1st. It was extremely slow. This would be a time, I believe, to fishing issues. So just to keep you updated, it began extremely slow in the state of California. It was open Two Point Arena, much better opener than we had last year. There was more fish available this year than there was last year, although, again, very slow. The prices reflected it. The prices to the vessel were as high as $6.50, generally hovering around $6 to the fishermen. Unfortunately, that is a very difficult price. And also, hopefully, we look forward to much more production in July and August, and those prices will come down. The commercial fisher would much rather get half of that money with twice the catch, just so people could enjoy it.
But that's rather have four times the catch and half the price, wouldn't you, Jeremiah?
Well,
we'd like you to have.
We honestly would rather, when the prices get that high, we know that we're only feeding the very wealthy people or someone who's out splurging for an evening, or would rather see people be able to enjoy it all the time.
Sure.
So, okay, thank you very much. Sorry.
Thank you, and I hope you will stick around for the next item and make your comments then.
Yeah. Okay,
thank you.
Thanks.
Ms. Barta. Nancy's going to be giving us a discussion or leading a discussion about the harbor portion only of Vision 2020. Am I correct, Nancy?
Yes.
Okay.
Good evening. Nancy Barta here, just as a citizen and a member of a follow-up committee to the 2020 Vision Committee. That committee was originally formed in 2004 with 10 volunteers, and if you read the report, the people that participated are listed in this report. They met until October of 2005, and a report was compiled entitled 2020 Vision, a Goals Report for the City of Morro Bay. And that's this document here, a portion of which you have in your packet. It's my understanding that the goals that are listed in this report are a compilation of issues that were brought up by members that are not listed as a consensus listing of goals. By that I mean that you could have one person on the committee that thought something was really critically important and it would be listed alongside something that everybody thought was really had to happen with regards to the issues reported in here. And there's no way you would know from the report which ones had a great deal of consensus and which one was something that one person really cared deeply about. And so when you read that, I think that's good to keep in mind. A few months ago at a community meeting, the idea of taking another look at this report was brought up, and as a result, a committee was formed that I affectionately call the 2020 Vision What Now Committee. And that committee is made up of Bob Hendricks, Janice Peters, Betty Winholt, Stuart McElhaney, Joseph Goodwin, Roger Anderson, Pepper Hughes, Ed Biagini, Peter Candela, myself, and Judy Salamanca. Each section in the report has been assigned for the purposes of developing strategies to implement and prioritize. So that's the mission of the group, is to take a look at what was presented here and assign it out to different individuals. Peter Candela has the business section, and Ed Biagini has a tourism section, and I think Janice has the city, and what was left for me was the harbor, and as a boat owner for 30 years report. I personally, with all of my experience on commissions, find that I value the input from people that don't have time to be on another committee. And so I want to structure a way that I can give my input and take advice and input from people that know and care about this, the issue of the harbor. And I will in turn compile it in an unedited fashion and put it together and report it to the group and continue on with that. That's the way that I would like to work. I find that sometimes meeting in groups is intimidating, and you don't. We're dealing with something like planning the future of a committee, of our city of Morro Bay, and giving input about the future, what happens with various aspects of our community, my portion being harbor. I'd like to get some real honest input from people without being intimidated by a group process. So I'm inviting people to give me input on this. I would like to start out with people just taking a look at the section of the harbor and helping me develop a prioritized list from this committee. But I would also feel that although we are not asked to rewrite this report, and that's expressly what we're tasked that we were asked not to do, but if we're planning up into the year 2020, that's a dynamic process, and times change and needs change and the environment changes. So if in the process of looking at this section you find that things were left out that are important to you, I certainly would encourage that to be included in the feedback that you give me. As a contact, I'd like to give you my email if you would like to help me participate with this. My email is NB, for my initials, Nancy Barta. So that's NB at infoville.com, infoville.com. Any questions, or that's all I'm starting out with? Yes.
You've listed priorities on this on this version that we received in our packet. Who came up with the priorities? I mean, it looks
What's listed in this section?
In our packet right here. You see that priority?
They have not come up with any. That is what this committee, that the second committee, what I call the 2020 Vision What Now Committee. This was a brainstorming by 10 individuals that completed and compiled in 2005. And it's not listed in any prioritized fashion or consensus fashion. So now as a follow-up, after this was done, it occurred to people, well, it's just sitting on a shelf. We should be doing something with it. And so that's what the follow-up committee was gathered together for, and as a result, divided up into sections. And Peter and Ed Biagini have their sections, and others have theirs. And mine was Harbor. I asked Roger to help me. I asked Ed to help me, and they asked that I come speak to you. There's no limit to how many people we would have on the committee if we're not meeting in a room and having the difficulty of finding an
appropriate. Priority one, priority two, priority three. Were those just ways of separating?
I believe they were the ways of separating because Mr. Hendricks explained it in the meeting that there were listed in here items. They were not necessarily ones that everybody agreed on. I think what you're seeing as priorities are outline fashion.
Okay.
And I think that's just the way that they put it together in outline
so
format.
It's not a value.
That's what the second committee is supposed to do, is give feedback as to value and priorities.
Okay. And thank you, Nancy. Okay. Are there any other questions for Nancy on this? And I think that, it's an opportunity for us as board members who have some familiarity with the harbor to offer input that could definitely be helpful for the committee and perhaps affect change. And for the record, I did volunteer many months ago to sit on this committee just before I took a job with a local agency. I have not attended any of the meetings or participated in any of the committee organizational work at all. So I don't feel I have any conflict of interest here. I'm just, for the record, wanted to state that. They're still carrying me on the roll, apparently, because I raised my hand, but I have not. I started a job with an agency that prohibited me from attending even the first meeting. So just put that out for your information. Okay. Now, Jeremiah, would you like to address one of the items that's on here, which happens to be to facilitate the establishment of an adequate vessel haul-out, boatyard, and boat storage facility so that we might listen to your thoughts there as we compose our thoughts?
Ladies and gentlemen of the Harbor Advisory Board, my name is Jeremiah O'Brien, president of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, and I did come here again unprepared, and Ed asked if I would come and address it. So it's not really unprepared because this has been on our minds for many years. As quite some time ago, there was real estate. I don't want to use the word allocated. I believe perhaps suggested for this said boatyard. There was also some funding for the design of the boatyard. I believe that was in the order of $40,000. I could be wrong about that. So this is not new to many in the town here. It's something that there has been some funding designated. Boats and Waterways, I believe, is a source for, I don't know how much of the funding, but I believe they are willing to supply funding for such a facility. Morro Bay, as we have seen, especially in the last 12 months here, we have seen boats sink in the harbor, causing fuel spills, so forth. Morro Bay is now a national estuary, and it's also now a marine protected area, and we're in the middle of, say, 60, 70 miles to the north and 60, 70 miles to the south to the nearest boatyard, so a distance of 140, 150 miles from one end to the other. if Morro Bay has these funds designated to put one on the plan or put one on the boards. I think the finances were for a marine architect to draw up the site. It's an energetic move. I hope if it does begin that I'm here to see it end. But it's something that we should hopefully think about. It's been tossed around for quite a few years, and perhaps now's the time to make a move on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Augert, do you want to make any brief comments about funding sources and a little history, or would you rather wait till next meeting?
I would like to comment on one thing. The Boating Access Facility Committee in, I think, 97 recommended to the City Council that in the Waterfront Master Plan was being considered at the time, be included a boatyard concept in the area just north of the the Morro Bay Power Plant intake structure. The city, that was contingent on acquiring land in the area, and that land problem was resolved with the what was known as the old Dendulk property being turned over to the city. Subsequently, the boardwalk project will make some changes in the area and actually put a small parking lot in the area where the boat, the interface between land and water, the usable area is the area just north of the intake structure. But does not preclude this plan. We think it has been kept in mind, and it does appear that, you know, those with some modifications, that area could still be used for a travel lift and a travel lift pier. It's an ambitious project. The City Council did agree that it should be put in the Waterfront Master Plan that was being considered at the time, which unfortunately I don't think ever was finally adopted fully through the process. But it certainly was a council designated project at the time. It's been something we've discussed for many years. We did do an economic study of the boatyard plan, and the bad news is it's another project that we don't have enough market here that to simply produce bare land and ask developers to come in and spend $4 or $5 million. We don't have enough market to probably get a developer to make that kind of investment. So it's going to take significant public action, public subsidies probably to construct the yard, but there have been operators that have shown interest if the infrastructure was put in place. So it's going to take public investment in the infrastructure and is a major planning and environmental project, as is anything on the waterfront these days. Last year, I believe, the City Council did approve a budget of $40,000 for a concept plan. It was in brief comments, and now I'm finally getting to your question, is that the concept plan really isn't yet to a stage where a marine architect would be able to look at it. It's where we need to have some planners do some additional detail work on what would be required and how big the site would be, and that's so just more conceptual work. We're not even close to being in a place yet where we could show you a plan that would eventually be submitted as a concept plan through the city's planning.
Please.
Even though these are, they got these priorities here, I don't consider them quite in order, but it says remove derelict boats in the city's jurisdiction, encourage the state to remove boats. Well, they've done that. We still have some derelict boats down there that seem to don't belong to anybody, but they're smaller ones. They're sailboats that tie to the teep here and whatnot, but if we had a boatyard, then we could haul out and at least put some dry storage in and get them out of the way. And then also over on the next page over in this vision says encourage development of infrastructure for the commercial fishing and the fishing industry. And this is right in line with that also. And I would think that it would be a priority for people like the estuary program to get a boatyard in here, especially after that Susan Diane sank and we had the problems with that. That costs the city a lot of money. And this can go on and on and on, not just the boats that are here that have been laying around and not working much. There's also the fact that we are the only harbor between Santa Barbara and Monterey, and that's quite a stretch. And you get a bunch of boats coming in. The first swing, somebody that beat up old boat breaks down, and here's the first place it comes into. So the boatyard would never pay for itself. It would have to be funded by grants, and I believe boating waterways would be one to go to, because it's not just hauling out commercial vessels. We're going to haul out a lot of the recreational boats, and that's where they get their funding from. Then there may be some other sources, because the fact that this it's been designated a national estuary, you would think that you would have more of the environmental organizations behind this project, because it's not only is it necessary for a good functioning harbor, it's also necessary for pollution control. And so that's about all I have to say, but it goes right in with these other priorities, and I believe it should be maybe not number one, but maybe the number two or three down from the person, because of the nature of things now have changed. And I'll be glad to when it's put on the agenda. Thank you.
Well, I think in the meantime, you can make some of your comments in writing and submit them to Ms. Barta and make sure that they have those in their possession even before our August meeting. And then anything additional could be passed on at that time. So, anything else from anyone before we move on? No. Mr. Ambo, we're going to take a 20-minute. No, we're not.
Thank you, Chairman and board members. I'm Bruce Ambo, for those of you I hadn't had a chance to meet. And with me I have Mike Prater, our planning manager, who had a pretty heavy hand in the drafting of this parking management plan in coordination with the consultants, as well as Rachel Grossman, who's not here tonight, but she's our associate planner and has quite a bit of a transportation planning background. But thanks for giving us the opportunity to present the parking management plan. Just in terms of background, your board and all the other advisory boards have in the past commented on parking-related issues at the council's direction. And that's part of the background of this. There's been this discussion about a number of parking-related issues involving circulation meters, time parking. The purpose in the study of the parking management plan, and you can refer to your overheads for the PowerPoint, but is to really determine the status of the parking supply and demand characteristics in the study area. And I'll get into what the study area is later, right after this. But to evaluate our current parking standards and provide recommendations for any modifications that they feel are more accurate for those parking standards. Assess alternative parking solutions, and develop a feasible action plan and some implementation strategies to address parking management. Develop a financial plan to accomplish those financial objectives. I mean those implementation strategies. Develop the management plan, and the concept of the management plan is to maximize the effective parking resources that we have, which is short of going out and building and acquiring land for parking areas and parking structures. And that's there are a number of management strategies that we've identified in here that are probably a more cost-effective means for managing our parking resources. And then through this process to educate the community on the cost of parking and some of the issues involved with parking. This map indicates, on your overhead, indicates the study area. We've configured the boundaries that come out to the rock and go all the way, extend all the way to Tidelands, and pick up pretty much the commercially zoned areas in the downtown central portions of the city. So that's really kind of the study area boundaries that we keyed this analysis to. But along the way, couple year or two ago, you may have seen some of the folks on the street actually counting parking spaces and getting an idea of what the curb space turnover was, you know, how long folks were parking, getting and also taking a look, see where these folks were coming from, seeing you know, if they're out of state plates and so forth. But so they did an inventory of the existing conditions and actually tallied up all of the parking areas that we have, both public and private. And then we conducted a public workshop to share the results of the parking survey with the community. And then we all in that workshop, we also assessed some of the jurisdictional standards and some of the kind of framework that the community has in place for dealing with parking requirements and the standards. And then We also, at the meeting, kind of shared some directions and where parking management strategies are heading to, and what some of the new tools or most effective tools are for dealing with parking management, and got an opinion on what direction we were headed to in terms of what seemed like a good fit for options that were available to us. And then we conducted another workshop where we kind of shared that with the community and said, well, this is what we've heard from your reaction to the survey. These are some of the tools that we looked at, some of the strategies to get at this parking issue, and then shared that with the community to see if, you know, we had overlooked anything or had any questions, comments, or suggestions. Or probably the most meaningful conclusion from the parking management plan is that we only have an isolated parking challenge, which is short of saying a parking problem, on a few key days, on a few key blocks, during a few hours, during a very brief 3-month period, and on occasion on certain special events. One of the special events we did study, we did off-peak and off-peak surveys of the parking areas. We also studied the Harbor Festival weekend, so we took a pretty big event too to get some indication about where the parking impacted areas were. But on a weekday profile, we found that we have critical demand, which is limited to the lunchtime activities in and around a couple isolated blocks on the Embarcadero. I don't know if that's that much of a surprise to many people. And on a weekend profile, it tends to be our peak hours are on the weekends when the weather's nice during special events. But again, in general, we have no overall parking supply problem. And what the management plan hopes to point to are more efficient, effective strategies for managing the plan. But when we did our survey of all the parking spaces, you might be surprised to know that we have about 2,453 parking spaces, both private and public, on street and in our parking lots. 2,453 parking spaces within that study area, so it's quite a few. And those are split roughly between public and private, roughly equally. And then there are a number of action plan and implementation strategies that we've identified. Now, I know in your document we've kind of laid out an implementation plan that has years 1, 2, and 3. I think we laid out a 5- or 10-year implementation plan. But the point I'd like to make is that we really are looking at kind of an immediate rolling plan for the next 3 years, and some of the other implementation strategies like angled parking and some of the more aggressive parking solutions are really just tools in the box, but we're not recommending that we include all of these things in the later years. Those things in the later years are more speculative, and hopefully we can grow into a legitimate parking problem and really need to use those tools to solve our problems. But I'm going to just kind of run through what some of the general ideas are. The first one is signage, and then we have, you may recall, we have, the council approved about a year or two ago, a directional signage program for the community that included gateway signs, kind of welcome, directional signs, getting people in and around the community, and all the way down to interpretive signs that could be used along the harbor walk. But the council has selected a design theme and a sign look and colors and all of that. So that's kind of on deck and ready to go. But one of the things that we noted is that we don't really have any signage that shows the unfamiliar visitor where our parking lots are, and that could facilitate a lot of the easier access, especially if folks have RVs or things like that, things that may tend to go. Component to that signage is really a public information program, and what we're thinking about doing is, and we worked with we shared these ideas with the promotions committee. They're pretty enthused about it, but the idea of having an icon that a parking icon where people instantly recognize that this is the way to the parking lots. And that information could be shared on the city's website, the chamber's website. We could give it out to special event promoters that showed all of the different parking areas, RV, fish, boat trailers and so forth. All of that kind of information can be disseminated through this information plan and map that we can have on, downloaded and easily accessible to folks that are interested in using it. Then probably one of the more exciting opportunities that some of the merchants were interested in is the concept of adding another trolley to our system. And this trolley would just go from the Rock to Tidelands Park back and forth all day during our peak period with 10-minute headways. And that way we think, A, people would be more prone to just hop on the trolley and have a nice visit and, you know, just go for the ride on the trolley all the way to the Rock and back to Tidelands and experience the Embarcadero. And we also think that, B, they probably, with 10-minute headways, be more likely to feel like they can park and just hop on the trolley and get off, you know, wherever they liked on the Embarcadero or go for the ride. And what this equates to is that we would need to purchase another trolley, and there is grant funding available for it. And if all the boards and commissions and the recommend this and the council agrees, council could give us direction to apply for another trolley for this route. And that trolley would also kind of interconnect with the other trolleys that run north and south, and the folks would be able to get off and then head further up into town or wherever they liked with the rest of the other trolley routes. But we could apply for a grant, and we could use the in-lieu funds for the city's match that would make our grant funding application fairly competitive. So there's more than a fair chance that we could get some funding for the trolley. As I indicated before, probably the most critical thing in the next 3 to 5 years, and when we get further out into the implementation program, some of the things get a little bit more speculative. Our position on that is, you know, let's kind of see where we are in year three and kind of assess how big of a problem we have if we do, with the idea that spending money to fix parking solutions is generally kind of expensive if we're looking at acquiring new sources of parking supplies. But from a modest standpoint, for this year, what we're hoping to do is bring this parking management plan and implementation program process to a conclusion, and that's in 2007, so that's year one. And then year two, we've identified a number of things, which include developing the parking design logo, adding the signage program. We've also decided to apply and get grant funding for the other trolley. Get into a discussion or put this on the program of activities to pursue and schedule that out and kind of weigh it with the rest of the programs, but get into a discussion with the business there, then that's who you want parking is versus your employees that may take up the premium parking. And they may do that for a number of reasons, safety and security at late hours, that's understandable. But from our perspective, that's kind of a different problem. We may be able to get them a safer path of travel that's well illuminated, where they don't feel, where employees that are going to their cars later in the evening feel safe and secure. So I think there's a way to deal with that. Year nine, I'm not going to get into in a lot of detail, which is, I think, year three. But in the later areas, there are a host of other things that we could look at. There are a bunch of zoning ordinance revisions that we could look at that recognize parking is available. Currently, our code doesn't acknowledge that there may be ample on-street parking, but the code doesn't allow for folks to use that. We could get more aggressive with mixed-use parking standards. We could also take another look at reducing the actual parking requirement that's applied in the zoning ordinance. So all of these things in combination kind of ratchet down the need to provide parking. And as you know, and we're sensitive to, parking in a coastal community, you know, is a prime use of land. And you know, it might be perhaps better used if we had folks using it, or we had a business there, or people were, you know, enjoying the views of the coast in those areas as opposed to parking a car there. So there's a number of things. I'd be happy to get at any, you know, answer any questions you might have about some of the things in the later years. I can tell you that what in terms of the process here, what we're going to do is forward all of the comments to the City Council, And like, for example, the Planning Commission had specific recommendations on things they'd like to see implemented sooner and later. And then what we will do, if the council directs us to, is come back with a program to implement the action plan that was identified in the management plan and amend the management plan document to, through the review process, we've picked up a lot of good feedback. And there are areas that we could modify the document to make it more useful and stronger. We're not going to edit any of the comments that anybody's making. We're just going to send it all along, and then the council will decide how they'd like to deal with some of that. Rick, the harbor staff has brought up one of the things about metered parking. I think it's fine to raise that issue in the context here, and if the council wants, they can carve that out of the herd and tell us, send Rick and the staff to begin that process. It's fine. You know, this is probably the place where it makes sense to hear that kind of feedback. But let me go get in here and see where my next steps are. Here, Mike's got that up there. So, well, that's where we are, actually. We're going to go to the council on June 25th, and the council will either say revise it and come back, or revise it and don't come back, or they'll definitely probably say revise it and come back with an implementation plan. That's the part that they'll probably need to get into and decide, you know, some systematic order of working at all of these things that are identified in here. But hope that you're exactly on point with what our concerns were, too. The purchase is one thing, but the ongoing operation and maintenance is another. Janine told me how much it costs to run them, and it's not a real big annual expense because we only run it for a few months out of the year. I don't think that's going to be as much of a challenge, you know. And at some point, if we decide it's not working for us, then we may have to shift gears. That would mean I'd head in a different direction. But I'm hoping we would see dividends paid off to the business environment sooner rather than later. Just make it a nicer experience if people weren't as congested, and they could actually use this to have a, you know, kind of a nice, mm-hmm. nice experience riding around from the Rock to the Tidelands. And then in terms of the maintenance implications, that is something, because at one of our meetings they brought up the idea of making an electric trolley, and sounded fine to us, but when we asked about the maintenance implications of that, they were significant, because the folks that work on our trolleys aren't electric. So that's a whole other universe that the city mechanics would need to get familiar with, and we'd need to stock parts and do different things. So that in there, so it is a little bit different for us, and that's one of the things we are sensitive to about electric trolleys, because right now they don't know how to work on them. I mean, they may, but they haven't been working on electric trolleys. But that's a key issue for us.
One other comment: there was mention in here of metered parking. I was in San Pedro when they put in meters, and it killed the shopping. People didn't go down there. They didn't always have the change for the meters, and all of a sudden there was nobody on the streets anymore. Obviously, I don't know how long that continued. Perhaps it changed after a few years, but the first 3 years were really detrimental to the businesses.
We asked our consultant about that, and he said it's a tool, but you really don't have an urgent need for metered parking right now. It may be something we could pick up later on after we've succeeded and the place is just bustling with activity, you know, 12 months out of the year.
If I may add, too, is that at one point I think metered parking was mentioned in my name, and we are proposing the idea of parking controls, paid parking program down at the boat launch ramp only, and that would not necessarily be metered. That might be one method, but the better, more recommended method is going to be to do some very low technology Iron Ranger type thing. So only in the boat launch ramp.
Lynn, anything else?
That's all. Thank you.
Ed?
I have a few questions. Are they still talking about doing a one-way street down the Embarcadero from Harbor to wherever?
That was brought up. this is the time to raise that kind of an issue. We dealt with it. You may recall the council looked at that about a year or two ago. And,
that's right.
And it was decided at that time that wasn't the idea to do. I would say if we want to talk about that again, we can use this to get at it. And if we want to raise that issue, we can get through this one-way discussion through this. And the council.
Harbor Walk. And if you look in here on page 59, there's a little map in here. And it shows a crosswalk coming across the street right there. Now, right as it stands right now, there's four parking spaces at the end of Beach Street. Are they talking about eliminating those parking places right in front of the boats? Sure looks like it. I don't see them designated there.
I don't know, but my recollection of the Harbor Walk, and Rick, you might be able to help me out here, is that we were netting out more spaces than we were, mm-hmm. with the project, we were netting out more spaces.
Yeah. The people that have boats and have to load stuff and carry groceries down and equipment and park there and work back and forth, yep. they don't appreciate having to have an alternate parking spot 20 miles down the road, you know, or however long it would be. It wouldn't make any difference if it's 20 feet. If that's what they're using now, it's convenient for them. And I see that this Harbor Walk here is going to take four parking spots out unless they redesignate them in there. And then down the way in front of the other ramps that go down there, there's guys that park there that load stuff in their boats all the time, and this Harbor Walk goes right through there. There would seem to me that rather than have that Harbor Walk in this area right next to the rocks, they could put it on the other side of the parking lot on the way down. It's just about see just as much.
We have a proposal, and thankfully Mike Prater's here. We have a proposal to do different things with the Harbor Walk in this area. Would any of those things get at this concern?
Good evening. Thank you. The Harbor Walk project, I'll start in general, is intended to start at the rock parking lot in the beach area and work its way back. And really through the process and the funding that was allocated and the heavy conditions that was placed by the Coastal Commission really only lends it to reach probably Coleman Park.
I see.
So the whole stretch along the waterfront with all the businesses and the commercial fishing and the tee piers, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with that. It's probably going to be incremental, piece by piece, as money has come forward or as businesses improve along that stretch.
So that may be quite a bit in the future then, you think?
Yeah, likely.
Considering the budget problems they're having.
I think they, to help Mike a little bit, or is it was fine, but they awarded the project for the area from the PG&E, power plant intake structure north. So at this time, none of the projects to the south have been awarded. The bids came in great. There's some potential that some of the work to the south could be done, and it is going to change if the plan as it is now stands. Were to be eventually constructed, it would change some of those loading zones and some of those parking areas for the slips.
Yeah, I don't really care for that particular.
This was paid for.
I understand it's a tool that you guys need. I'm just curious how much it costs.
Well, it's a tool and is also asked for by the Coastal Commission. I thought it was about $40,000, and it was paid for through the in lieu fees.
I was asked to find out how much it was earlier today. I know that we did an awful lot of study with the traffic circulation plans, and I see no mention at all in here to that. I know that it may be a separate issue, but I think that it should have been at least considered part of it. Whatever you do is all has to do with traffic circulation. Mm-hmm. Whether you do one way or not, it's part of the whole system. As far as the trolley, I think Morro Bay should be on the vanguard of vehicular transportation with pedestrians and pedestrians. The trolley is a great idea, but let's see whether we can't do something like at least go with electricity, maybe, you know, a tidal generator, or when you get on it, you feel like you're getting part of the, you know, you're helping things out here, you know. Biodiesel, fish oil, something, you know, besides just plain old gasoline fumes. Thanks. That's all.
Bill.
I also didn't read this from start to finish, but I felt that you guys did a great plan. My one concern and knowing the budgetary problems that you have here, I mean, where is the money going to come from just to even implement signage? I mean, is it in the budget right now? Where is that? I didn't see that anywhere in there. You know, you said in the year, you know, for the next year, you're going to do certain things. Has that money already been assigned and allocated? And what is that money?
Yes. Everything, it's kind of a long story, but it's good news. We just found out like a couple weeks ago that we finally got our gateway signs approved through Caltrans, and that's they have a gateway sign on Highway 1 northbound, and then also have a gateway, kind of a welcome, you've arrived, here's Morro Bay, and then also a gateway sign on Highway 41, and then the other entrances have them, and then we would refurbish those. Caltrans has indicated now because you know Highway 1's a scenic byway, that a certain amount of the funds will be released for a gateway signage, directional signage, and even interpretive signage. And because we've been so proactive, we're probably the first in line to get these funds because everybody else doesn't have their stuff in as good order as we do. So, I mean, we're just waiting for the funds to be released. So, in answer to your question, it's grant-funded. When we originally targeted the money, the source of funds was past CDBG, grant-funded program revenue, and that's how we were going to pay for that. But now we'd rather use the Caltrans money and keep the CDG deprogram the CDBG funds for some other kind of economic development or housing expenditure.
So how much money are we talking about, like, for the initial first year in implementing this particular program that you have?
That's a good, right. You know, I don't recall off the top of my head, but what we will do, though, the next step.
Run on fish oil. I think it's a great idea to have the extra trolley route just for one thing, to use all the parking that's available on the north end of the waterfront. And also, I know when I take my daughter to Santa Barbara, I get in trouble if I don't park on the opposite end of where we're going and then jump on the trolley to get to the other end, just because it's fun. And I think a lot of people would like to. It'd be better to have people seeing the waterfront on a trolley than trying to drive in the traffic. And it is kind of frustrating having all that. And the boat trailer parking fee. I don't know. It's a good idea if it's used for the purpose of clearing that out a little and saving the spaces for the people that are actually launching boats on it daily. That was about all of my opinion. I had all my questions were answered in this parking management plan that I read. Thanks.
Thank you.
My turn. First of all, I do understand the need for this. I understand the relationship with the Coastal Commission, and I understand the desirability of having conclusions that say we only have an isolated parking problem. That's a good thing, that those are the conclusions. However, in looking at your maps showing the counts, the peak demand areas, the areas that are impacted at 86 to 100%, 100% plus, there's a fatal flaw here. I've lived in the most impacted block in your study for 40 years. And what's not in there, and don't tell the Coastal Commission or anybody who needs to know, who might be concerned, a business that at peak had 15 employees and 80 chairs wasn't even operating during your count. And on that site, that again I'm very familiar with, new operations will be starting soon with just slightly reduced customer counts. Square footage is a little lower in the restaurant. The uses have changed on the site a little bit, and therefore the parking impact will be slightly reduced as far as employees and customers. But for the last several years, there's been a much reduced impact there as far as both employees and customers. And when we get back in operation, the ripple effect going outwards will be there again. I have always been of the impression that there are times, probably a little more often than is concluded here from my own observations when we're in business, that there is a parking problem down there. However, the solution that I've looked for years and finally was able to help facilitate after a 10-year effort was timed, tells me that probably there's some people that are exceeding the 3 hours. And I really think, and I hope that there might be a way to push forward some sort of enforcement program. And that would encourage employees to park farther out, let the people who are spending the money, contributing the taxes that, you know, support the lease sites that make the money, support the businesses uptown, on the harbor, you know, that's what keeps the piers repaired, or the businesses that generate the lease incomes. And again, if there could be some sort of even a break-even enforcement with some of the community volunteers getting paid in an electric cart, golf cart even, to do enforcement, I would really think that we would resolve the parking issues down there. It's the overtime, the lengthy parking by employees who really don't understand the concept of the people who provide my paycheck need to have access to the stores.
Mr. Chair, I'll even add to that. The revenues from enforcement can in turn go back into this parking management program. So I mean, and there are some communities that have been very successful at that through parking enforcement and kind of shifting those revenues back towards parking solutions. So, it's not an open-ended proposition. We may be able to more effectively solve problems and potentially throw off revenue to whatever fund it's destined to.
I don't think that the idea is punishment. It's just cooperation and turnover and encouraging it. And if one of my employees or if I got a ticket, everybody I work with would know, hey, they're enforcing the parking, and I'd park somewhere else. I would change my habits in a big hurry. Because I don't like paying parking tickets. I've gotten a few in San Luis Obispo, and I use the structures now because if I use a meter, I might not get back in time. So, you know, it's and people change their habits according to the needs. And so I would just, you know, I would like to remind you, though, that are being closed. We have 15 employees and 80 chairs in the old days that were not included in this, and yet that block was still the most heavily impacted, and I really think that there's a ripple effect going out, and your numbers might have been even higher. I'm happy you concluded there wasn't a problem, because if we concluded there was a problem, we'd have lots of other issues to deal with. Thank you for putting up with my comments. Oops. Anything else?
Yeah, Bruce, I was wondering, one thing that would cure a lot of that parking down there in that particular area was if they get the parts a lot to open up. The vacant lot next to it.
Oh, right.
And yeah. That's right. Been sitting there for a long time. I think they bought it just to make sure nobody blocked their views. But I don't know, the city tried to negotiate with them. It wasn't too successful at that.
We've identified that. That's that concept of public-private partnerships and, you know, good use is the bank. You know, on the weekends they're not open, and that's a busy time downtown, and folks could use that area, and maybe we could make another run at those folks to see if we can put that in a better use for parking.
Yeah, I think they'd be more willing to allow parking there. I think what they're afraid of is that once parking begins and the city is using it for that, that they'd never be able to use that parking, I mean, that property for something else, because that would be a grandfathered use. And if you assured them that any time that they wanted to, that they could go ahead and do whatever they wanted to that within the zoning codes, then they might change their tune. But I know I talked to her a couple years ago. She was afraid the city was going to condemn that property. And was asking me about it, and I told her I didn't know anything about that. So, but that would be a good one to work on, that lot, I think.
You should try to formulate a recommendation on that issue, because you can see that one coming. Individual voices will try to record that your comments, for example, but you would be much more powerful in having the council see a resolution board. Another issue I heard Mr. Ewing brought up is, I believe this is the concept plan for the Harbor Walk, and it will change the parking alignment at Beach Street and in front of the other slips. There is area there potentially for commercial, you know, vehicle loading that could be accommodated, but it won't be the same, and it will probably be less directly for your concern. You may want to comment through this process, for example, on that one too, that perhaps, you know, commercial loading for slips is in your opinion, critical to the continuing service and needs to be, plans need to reflect that. So, you know, this is an opportunity for you to, if you have a feeling for something on paid parking, for example, for or against. Again, a recommendation to the council at this time would be good, or potentially formulate your next meeting. And I'll end by asking Bruce a question. It'll be sort of in the form of a statement, so you correct me. But I'm going to guess that the council is going to ask for some revisions or some further review beyond just the June meeting, and that they'll probably be looking at this plan through this summer. If some miracle they accepted it and just said prepare an implementation plan, still there's going to be plenty of opportunity for council review of actual actions. So I don't think you need to necessarily formulate those recommendations today. They could probably be done even in August and be effective, but maybe Bruce would help me.
Well, it's whatever the council's most comfortable with, but we know through the review and a lot of these things where there are changes to the document that need to be made. But if you feel strongly on a certain course of action, please forward the comments. We're just sending all the comments along, and the council will sort through all of those and then kind of translate that into what they feel are the priorities, and then send out a work program and lay that on top of the other work programs and sort that and the priorities. So,
since we aren't meeting in July and we won't meet again until August, that would mean the council really couldn't consider anything we acted on in August until the second meeting in August. I think maybe we ought to, at least on three or four items, at least have some discussion tonight, maybe see if there's a consensus on the board or a strong feeling, a majority feeling about some of the items. For instance, let's talk for a few minutes about two-way traffic versus one-way on the Embarcadero. That's been something that's come up, and Mr. Ewing, I think, rather correctly pointed out that the people down there who live there every day were strongly opposed to it. I don't know how other board members feel. You can probably guess my feeling, but I'm only one. Gene.
Yes, when I was referring earlier to the traffic circulation plan, they, of course, wanted to see one-way traffic through there. What I was trying to say was I didn't see any reference to that comment nor any of the references to the comments of the public meetings of the people who did not want to see that there. I believe that I've been here a number of years, that I have yet to see anybody say that we need one.
Point of reference, I'm fairly new, but this has, I'm sure, been discussed over the years, or at least the last couple months. And Rick is going to present this to the council, whether we agree to it or not. Is that a correct statement? That's kind of what I'm trying to understand. Is that something that he feels that needs to be done, and whether we care or even want to do that or not?
I mean, well, we are an advisory board to the council, right. And every once in a while, we might be in disagreement. I'm not sure if we are. I think we ought to talk about it. And if there's strong disagreement with Mr. Algard on this, he's certainly not going to misrepresent our position.
No, I'll be very careful about that, because occasionally we do have disagreements in a sort of a different chain of command, with you advising the council and me, of course, reporting to the city manager and making a staff recommendation to the city council. What I'm warning you is that it's my conclusion that they're for management purposes at the lot, and as a revenue-raising measure, our costs in the Harbor Fund are going up. We had our cost allocation increased to $300,000 this year from $200,000 to the general fund. I just learned today I'm going to have another approximately $50,000 a year expense that I'm going to have to pay right now on to pay for all the waterfront garbage. So we need to look at revenue issues here pretty quick, or serious cutting of expenses probably pretty soon in our budget. So this is an area that typically boat launch ramps are charged from. I think ours is the only one I'm aware of in the area that does not charge. Santa Barbara's 15, you know, they're typically high, much higher than we're talking about at $5 a day. So for those purposes, I think it is prudent for the staff to recommend City Council consider adopting the details of which would have to be worked out once we get council direction on that. And I would target potentially for next summer, to have it in place for next summer. So I would, you know, I'd value your input. I'm sure the council does too. We may possibly disagree. I hope that can be done amicably.
I have a question, Rick. When you charge these fees, are the guys that have slips down there and pay for the slips and have the boats in the slips, are they going to get a pass, or are they going to have to pay every time they go in there?
The slips, so what my proposal conceptually is that we would charge only for the double stalls, and that the single stalls not be.
For boat with trailer like that.
Yes, for the double trailer and boat launch. And the purposes there really are because there are other expenses with folks who use the boat launch. The ramps are expensive, the launch, the lanes and the paving itself. Then, of course, they may be using our pump outs, our side tide dock. There's maintenance and repair on those facilities. So those are the only real boaters. They may even use water, which is available at the dock. So at the docks, those may use our bathrooms and everything else. Typically, boaters do have fees that they pay. These folks are able to access the water and use our facilities without paying a fee. So there is an equity issue there too, but that isn't the top one for me. So at this point, I would not recommend to the council. I think that we would control the entire lot and try and charge on the entire lot, that we would simply set up an Iron Ranger type system where people have to pay for those use of the double stalls. Yeah, for a truck and launching vehicle.
That's fine.
And that's probably on the order of $15,000 to $35,000 a year parking spaces. The other one, I forget what it was right now. Well, obviously some people may not want to use the lot and may not come to town if there's a parking fee.
You know, after reading the reports from the other two harbors that are small harbors, it seems we're still the best bargain in the state. Free launching, and unfortunately, there's an availability issue, a limited area for boats with trailers, and those of us who spend a little time on the waterfront know that there are some people who have used that as a storage yard. You know, the boats that park there for days and weeks at a time on the trailer, not going in the water, and really depriving somebody else of the privilege of using the facility, who really wants to get in the water and park there. And I think that it would help with the maintenance and cover some expenses. And I don't have a problem with it. It's a very modest charge, and I really don't think people are going to be able to point to us and say, well, I can get it for $1.50 down the street. There isn't any down the street. Gene?
I'm opposed to the fee parking at the boat launch. I understand it was to get some of the boats that were staying there using it for storage, but I think you're punishing the local people, the people in Morro Bay who have a little aluminum boat and they want to go out and drift for halibut. I'm shocked to see how this community, Morro Bay, has just bent over, grabbed their ankles, and take anything they can to get the money. It's I like to see Morro Bay for Morro Bay people, and I just everything you turn around with, it's got to be money, money, money. And I know that's the way things are, but I think the people in Morro Bay deserve some kind of break.
Anyone else? Lynn?
That was a pretty powerful statement, Gene. I walk down to Tidelands Park about twice a day, taking my dog for a walk, and I do notice boats that are sitting there taking up space and not going anywhere. Probably not very many of them, but I can sort of tell you which ones have been there for the past 5 days, and when I look at that, I say, yeah, it's a reasonable thing to do. Are those local boats, or are they out-of-towners? I don't know. I've never paid any attention to that part. And I'd have to think about it. If it might sway me. It might sway my opinion if it were the case that they are always local people. But even so, you know, 4 or 5 days of sitting there and not going into the water, that's probably not a reasonable expectation.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ambo, you want to address this?
There's nothing to preclude you from your folks talking about this and Rick bringing it up at any time you like in the future. You know, if you'd like to bring it to coincide with the parking management plan, that's fine. But I'm just saying, you know, you folks can
a message on. Again, I don't think there's as much a problem with with spaces as enforcement. And I think that I would really like to strongly recommend, and if the board agrees with me, enforcement. There could be a small revenue source, but the most important thing would be the efficient use of the spaces and making them available for the people who pay all our bills, including the taxes and, you know, all the stuff, the trickle-down stuff. Is there any opposition to encouraging the city council to do enforcement since they do have time limits?
They're supposed to enforce the laws.
Yeah.
What about Ed's concern about loading area at the bottom of Beach Street?
We can address that one next. Okay. But as far as enforcement, is it consensus that we'd like to see enforcement? Okay. And then for the commercial slips, if the beach walk or the harbor walk is put in there, at the very least, if not full-time parking for those boat slips, at least a loading zone for those slip holders. Is that a fair characterization of a compromise, Ed? Ed, did you see what we had to do on the front of our building? What do you think the chances are of moving it across the street?
What do you think the chances are of never putting it in there?
I'm not sure it's going to happen across the street if it happens.
I'm against them.
Mike, Ed.
I'm against them taking any additional spaces for a walk when people can walk down there just fine right now. They don't have to have a designated path to walk on. They walk all over the place down there, wherever they so choose. So why take up valuable parking places just to put a sidewalk in? It's stupid. Thank you.
There well may be agreement with your statement. However, if the Harbor Walk goes in, and there are bigger agencies than the city involved in those decisions, I think that it's clear that this group would at the very least want to encourage the preservation of a loading zone there for the slip holders. Is that?
But, you know, if I may make a comment to make your most helpful to Bruce and the council, I would suggest you make it kind of global and say, I mean, it's a parking management plan. You would like to see a priority given for where there are slips. They do need loading facilities. In this plan, it needs to be included to the extent wherever possible, and i.e., for example, at Beach Street, the Harbor Walk plan would potentially reduce or even eliminate some loading at those slips, and that's not what you want, is what I'm hearing.
That's what I should have said. Everybody in agreement? Okay. Are there any other issues that in case the council does move forward, that we need to send Mr. Ambo away with our strong opinions tonight? They may still be talking about it in August, but I thought that these were... next item is cancellation of the July 5th meeting. Anybody opposed to that? It's been traditionally the July meeting always falling around the 4th has been canceled for many years. 4th is Wednesday. Yeah. So
when is the meeting after that?
First Thursday in August. Okay, I'll take your word for it. Okay. All right, so all in favor of canceling the July meeting? Aye. Opposed? None. Harbor status report.
We already talked about the Harbor Walk project. I think that we probably see construction start in August, but there is some final issues to be worked on the coastal permit, for one thing. So there is some variability there. As I said, they have awarded this part only now north of the PG&E, the power plant intake structure. And there is some discussion, though, that if there were some funds available, some additional portions of it might be awarded, and that is under review currently. Salmon disaster relief, that's great news. The question now is how quickly will the state act to get that money out in programs? And past history has not been good, and certainly the state now is viewed by most of us as not ready for action on this. Ice machine, we did hold a ribbon cutting and we're in an operation, so that's quite a threshold. We did include to you, I think, a letter. Yes, we did, on this exempted fishing permit application that is kind of a unique partnership between the Nature Conservancy, Environmental Defense, the two commercial fishermen's organizations in our area, and the California Department of Fish and Game. That will be considered by the Pacific Fisheries Management Council next week for agendizing all their committees and then eventually consideration for approval or not at their November PFMC meeting. We hope this is one important way that we might be able to restore some access to the groundfish in our area again.
Rick, before you move on, mm-hmm. How long the ice machine was a lesson in patience and persistence? How long has it taken from conception to ribbon cutting?
Well, I think originally it was started to work on planning and with Jerry Driscoll, so that goes back. I think about 2002, 2001. The equipment was purchased in 2004, I believe, and we finally installed it.
Okay. Thank you.
SLOSEA, we gave you a report on SLOSEA, which is the ecosystem-based management study, which was funded, originated at MIG, the Marine Interest Group work. A subgroup of the Marine Interest Group realized that there was potentially money available to do a ecosystem-based management research and study here in this area. They received, I think, almost $3 million in grant funding and various sources to do that work, renamed itself and called SLOSEA. They do have a website, I believe. I hope we listed it here. If we didn't, I think if you Google SLOSEA or you can come up with it. Yeah, or under... Oh, yes, thank you. And also the Marine Cooperatively with them, of course, we'll assist them whenever we can, and we often do. And they're a great service to us because, you know, the public really wants something to be done with these stranded marine mammals. And there's protected by federal law, a lot of issues there, even health issues. So the Marine Mammal Center, we can call them, and when, you know, they can take appropriate action, they're trained and have the equipment. So... we do work with them, and I would make a comment that it wasn't included here, but you may have been reading quite a bit about domoic acid, and there was some pretty, what I would almost call hysterical reports in the paper about domoic acid blooms in Southern California area. Domoic acid, we have not seen signs of that kind of domoic acid intensity in our area yet, and we haven't seen, you can see when the marine mammals are showing the effects of that, they have sort of a swagger that's pretty distinctive, or they move their head. sort of back and forth. And they look appear ill. They will be on the beaches. We haven't seen that in our area, so apparently that is not showing up yet in our area, at least. And no one really knows whether these domoic acid increases are natural or due to human impacts. Most likely, if there is a cause, human impacts, it probably is coastal pollution, but a lot of research yet needs to be done on all of that. So the good news is, I think, at least in our area at this time, that what you may be reading about domoic acid intensity is not showing up. We have really cold water, and that's a part of it, and it's still really cold. Yeah, I mean, it's been exceptionally cold this year for an exceptionally long period. Mike, yeah. Yeah, it's been a fairly recent, you know, the ocean didn't, there was hardly any bait around. Now the water warming up a little bit and the bait is just thick, the whales all over the place, and everybody hopes salmon are not far behind. Thank you.
Any additional comments? Michelle.
Saturday is free fishing license day. You don't have to buy a fishing license to go fishing.
Is that boats and pier?
Anybody.
Anywhere?
In California.
Wow. Anything else? Future agenda items. We've already decided we're going to hear a report on the boat haulout facility, storage, all that stuff. And I think that we ought to put the parking management plan back on, because if the council has moved in a direction that, you know, if they've done anything and we have a chance to respond or add further comments, it'd be good to have it on there. Anything else?
Yeah, you were asked about leases coming up that we should talk about. Perhaps the fuel dock lease should be discussed.
Oh, okay. Can you give us an update, Rick, at that time, or you want to do something now?
Well, as you know, the lease negotiations aren't necessarily within the board's purview, but I'm certainly always happy to give you a report on a status, as it certainly affects one of our major boating facilities. Maybe you'd like that on your August meeting. Is that what I'm hearing?